New York Times bestselling author of Black Klansmen, Ron Stallworth, returns with another firsthand account of trailblazing police work in the most unlikely place for a black cop in the 1990s. His new book is The Gangs of Zion. Determined to pursue his passion for undercover work wherever it leads, Ron Stallworth finally lands in Salt Lake City, Utah. Once again, he's an outsider, not only as a black man on a mostly white police force, but also as an unapologetic non-believer in a state dominated by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But soon after his first drug bust in the Beehive, Stallworth makes a startling discovery. Bloods and Crips are infiltrating Mormon country, threatening to turn the deeply conservative community into a hotbed of crime. Now, Stallworth has a new mission, but the more Stallworth speaks truth to power, the more determined the gatekeepers in Utah are there to silence him. He writes about all of this in The Gangs of Zion, A Black Cop's Crusade in Mormon Country, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Ron Stallworth to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
No, the pleasure is mine. Thank you.
So give us a sense of the chronology of where you were in your career that then brought you to Utah and to Mormon country.
Well, I left the state of Wyoming, where I worked for the Attorney General's Division of Criminal Investigation, working undercover narcotics from 82 to 86. And Wyoming is a different state. I wasn't happy there, so I sought employment elsewhere. And I ultimately applied for and eventually got hired by the Utah Department of Public Safety's Narcotics and Liquor Law Enforcement Bureau. And I got there in July of 1986. I worked there from 86 until 2006 when I retired. When I got there, crack cocaine was just starting to make its appearance in the state. I made one of the first crack buys, about $100 worth, and I bought it off a L.A. Crip. So that alerted me to the fact that something was happening, and I wrote a report to my superiors outlining what I suspected was happening, what was later confirmed to me by L.A. Authorities that was in fact happening, that Crips and Bloods were moving out of South Central to parts in the interior of the country, and we were just one of the latest to be hit. So I wrote my report. I outlined principles for how to address it, and my boss took it to the leadership of the Federal Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, comprised of all the police leaders in the Salt Lake Metropolitan Valley, and they allocated between $6,000 and $8,000 to my agency for me to do an intelligence investigation into this problem. And the Salt Lake City police chief the very next day announced he was forming a gang narcotics intelligence unit out of his department. And my commissioner assigned me to that unit. And we were off and running on April Fool's Day in 1989.
April Fool's Day. So there you are going out and doing this. Did the report surprise people when it landed, or did many within the department and within law enforcement in the region see this as something that was A, inevitable, and B, that was indeed that they had seen signs of as well?
No, the basic attitude up to that point was non-concerned, non-involved. The general belief was Utah was predominantly conservative, it was predominantly white, and it was predominantly Mormon. And these kids were black kids and Hispanic kids coming from an inner city community in South Central LA and East LA. And they didn't believe that their state community could possibly be penetrated by such individuals. And I beg to differ. I yelled and screamed a lot about the fact that it was here, it was happening. LAPD warned us this was going to happen. We should address it now in its infancy before it gets out of hand and uncontrollable.
So when you meet kids who are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and you see that they are becoming involved in gang activity, where did they learn it from? Where is that coming from?
Well, two ways. One, we had a lot of Mormon, Tongan and Samoan gang members who originally came from South Central L.A. and who, in fact, were members of the Mormon Church. Mormon Polynesians were Crips and Bloods back in their original home environment. But they moved to Utah with their families to be closer to their religious leaders. So they brought a lot of that cultural influence with them.
Mm-hmm.
But the factor that got my attention was the fact that white Mormon kids in Salt Lake City were learning about Crip and Blood gang culture through the gangster rap music they were listening to. That was the first time I heard the term gangster rap. So I basically started buying the rap tapes that were popular at the time, NWA, Ice Cube, Ice-T, etc., and started listening to the music. And what I found was that gangster rap music at that time was a elementary school primer on Crip and Blood gang culture and how to be a gang member in general. And the white Mormon kids in Utah were fascinated by it and adopted it as their own.
So as you continued to investigate, you started to get great resistance from local politicians and fellow officers and, of course, community members. And I'm interested in what it was about what you were doing that they were so concerned about.
Well, I was telling them that your church is failing these kids. These kids will acknowledge their church affiliation, but they will also acknowledge that they're in a gang. They'll acknowledge what the gang is, and they will tell you that they're not going to give up their gang affiliations just because they're members of the church. We caught Mormon kids who were going around doing drive-by shootings and throwing Molotov cocktails, firebombs, at their enemies who had the Book of Mormon, holy text of the Mormon faith. They had the Book of Mormon in pocket size in their hip pockets. And I remember asking some of these kids, how do you reconcile doing drive-by shootings and throwing Molotov cocktails, trying to kill your quote-unquote enemies, when you're carrying your holy text in your hip pocket? And their response was always the same. They would shrug their shoulders and say, I just do. Mm. I believe in my religion, but I'm also believed in my Crip affiliation. And I'm not going to abandon either one.
So were the leaders of the church then left to put their heads in the sand and not agree that the kids were part of the gangs, or did they see it and just wanted to protect them?
The leaders of the church adopted the attitude that I was wrong. These kids were confused. They were misguided. They just needed to go to church more often. They needed to sit down with their bishops more often. In other words, church was the solution to everything, and I called bullshit on it. I respect everyone's religion. I'm not a religious person myself. I respect other people's beliefs. But when you tell me that all you need to do is read the Bible more, read the Book of Mormon more, I call bullshit on that. People were dying. People were living in fear on the west side of Salt Lake City because the Molotov cocktails were flying and bullets were flying. And no amount of reading the Book of Mormon, no amount of reading the Bible was going to change that. I was saying that we need to adopt something different. For example, I advocated at one point denying these kids their religious sacraments. They believe in their church, so deny them access to the church functions. I even took that attitude with the Catholic church leaders on some of the Hispanics who were doing the same thing. I remember one priest who said he was in the favor of my suggestion, but when he took it to his leaders, they said no, there was no way they were going to deny communion to Catholics based on the fact that they were gang members. I saw it as another tool to address the rising gang problem, and they didn't see it that way.
Talk a little bit about the leadership, the gang leadership within the community. And obviously a lot of this was kids, as you mentioned, a lot of it was spreading through gangster rap and other sources. As far as leadership goes, where was that coming from?
Gang leadership is determined in different ways. It could be the biggest kid. It could be the smartest kid. It could be the most prominent kid, the one with a reputation, especially a reputation for upholding the ideals of the gang. We had a Hispanic gang called Sureños 13. It was started by a Hispanic kid from Job Corps. We had the fourth largest Job Corps facility in the country in Clearfield, Utah. And this guy, Babyface was his gang name. Babyface came from East L.A., and he came to Salt Lake City. He started recruiting gang members, or started recruiting kids in the Utah community, Hispanics, and he formed Sureños 13. And in time, it became the largest gang in Salt Lake City, over 300 strong. And Babyface told the lie that he was a East L.A. Gang veteran. We did some checking, and it turned out he was a nothing in the L.A. gang community. He told a lie. The local kids believed him, and they followed his leadership. It turned out bad for everybody. Babyface eventually got caught for an armed robbery of a 7-Eleven store, was convicted, and served prison time. But the disease that he let loose continued and got even worse. For a while, the west side of Salt Lake City was a shooting gallery of Sureños versus everybody else. So the leadership happens in different ways.
How do you feel you were ultimately successful in limiting gang activity within Salt Lake City, especially given all of the challenges and hurdles that were presented to you?
That's just it. I wasn't successful.
Yeah.
We were able to keep a handle on it, but we weren't successful in putting an end to it simply because we didn't get the backing that we needed in when we first started, when it was still in its infancy. Had they supported us in it while we when we first appeared on the scene and announced what was going on, we might have been able to make a serious dent in the problem, like LA police advised us to do. But when we were fighting not only the gang members, but the local community, their parents, the church leadership, breakdown of the community into race. We had all these elements going on, and we weren't able to accomplish what ultimately we wanted to do, and that was put a stop to it. I remember the talk. I had a talk with the Senate Majority Leader, very powerful political official, State Senate Majority Leader, and he said the solution to the problem was to build a detention facility in the desert west of the Great Salt Lake. And no guards were needed. Just build a fence, build a 12-high electrified fence, turn the current on, and put the white, and I emphasize, put the white and the black kids in this facility, turn the current on, and let them go at it with their gang violence, and let the current solve the problem for Utah taxpayers. And I told him, I said, do you realize, Senator, that what you're describing is against the law? It would be a violation of the 14th Amendment rights to due process and would be considered cruel and unusual punishment. You talked about juvenile. I said, and I noticed that you only emphasized black and Hispanic kids. You didn't say anything about white kids and the Polynesian kids who are members of your church. Why is that? He just looked at me, turned around, and walked away.
Hmm. How do you see the situation now, all these years later, of where we are when it comes to this level of gang activity?
It's gotten worse over the years. It will get worse continually. As long as the community wants to take defensive posture in terms of protecting the gang members and their wrongfulness and view the cops trying to stop it as the enemy, you're never going to solve the problem. We have gotten closer handle on it over the years, but you still have people who don't believe that gangs exist. When I left Utah in 2016, you still had a county, Davis County, where I lived, you still had a county that did not believe they had a gang problem, in spite of the evidence that I presented to the county attorney's office, and which he in turn presented to the police community in Davis County. They still believe, the sheriff at that time and the police chiefs at that time still believe that they did not have a problem with gangs because they were predominantly white, they were predominantly Mormon, they were predominantly conservative, and all the other problems were coming from kids in Salt Lake City who passed through their county. And it was a very naive explanation, but it was what they believed. And they didn't like being told that their belief was wrong.
It's a stunning story. It is told in the book, The Gangs of Zion, A Black Cop's Crusade in Mormon Country. The book is published by Legacy Lit. Ron Stallworth, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. So nice to have you on the program.
My pleasure, sir, and thank you.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Gangs of Zion. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.